The following program is for informational purposes only. Do not make any investment without speaking to a licensed financial advisor.
It's time for Americans to grow up and become financially responsible.
Let's talk about something important.
If you're in it for the money, that's not a bad thing.
Do you realize how much money he just saved us?
This is The Financial Physician with Lou Scatigna.
The Financial Physician. It's the fastest hour in Money Talk Radio.
It's also my pleasure to see to it that decent, hardworking people in this community aren't robbed blind by a pack of money-mad pirates.
This is financial advice you can take to the bank.
He's your money man.
Show me the money.
Your source for straightforward, no-nonsense financial advice.
Bring me your money questions because I'm here to help.
And now, here he is, the financial physician, America's money doctor, Lou Scatigna.
Hello, my friends. How are you? And welcome to the Financial Physician Podcast for April 28th, 2024. Thanks so much for joining us. I have a great program for you today. The entire second hour, I have a guest. Now, we were talking about guests a few weeks back, and most of you don't mind me having a guest once in a while, but the guest I have today is truly an internet sensation. He's all over the place, and we're very fortunate to have him the entire hour. I'm not going to say who it is, but we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff, what's happening in this country politically, what's happening geopolitically, what's going on with the BRICS, the dollar, gold. We're going to talk about it all. In the second hour of the program. So you're not going to want to miss that. Also, later in the program, Joe Biden's considering declaring a national climate emergency and giving himself COVID-like powers without congressional approval. We'll talk about that. How about Santa Monica, California, building a new apartment complex for the homeless? It's going to cost $1 million per unit. Talk about going from the street to uptown New York, right? We'll get into that. FBI Director Chris Wray came out again in an interview and is warning us of a potential terrorist attack, very similar to the one in Russia, Moscow, that concert hall attack. Why does he keep coming out and warning us about it? I think something may be imminent that he knows about. Well, it looks like the case against Donald Trump in New York is really starting to fall apart. It's an absurd case to begin with. Legal scholars are calling it embarrassing, and we'll dump into that. Are you one of the 72 types of Americans that are considered potential terrorists? Well, official government documents list 72 different categories of people that would be considered terrorists by your government, and it's going to be pretty hard not to fall into one of these categories. I'm going to go over them later in the program. Let's start the program talking about money. Money. Get back. I'm on my jack. Keep your hands off of my stack. Money. It's a hit. I'm probably breaking a copyright law playing that, but so let's talk money. What is it? This is a money show. We talk money, markets, politics. But what is money? Do you ever really think about it? Money really is any medium of exchange that symbolizes some value or perceived value. And because it's perceived to have some value, people will accept it as payment for goods and services or the repayment of loans. You know, they say money makes the world go round. Well, that's true. I mean, almost any economy, especially a growing economy, relies on money to make transactions happen and to make the economy grow. Before the development of actual money, paper money, as a medium of exchange, they used barter to obtain what you wanted. Two individuals, each possessing something that the other person wanted, could just trade them. But it's not a good way for an economy to work because, number one, you have to find somebody who wants what you have and that has what you want. It's very, very difficult to do. So when you have paper money, it doesn't really matter because it can always be exchanged into something else. Here's an example. Suppose someone has cows. They're a rancher. They have cows. But they need bananas. So they got to find somebody out there who not only has bananas, but also has a desire for meat or milk. So what if you find someone who has a need for meat, but no bananas and can only offer you potatoes? So it's very difficult to barter. Also, what if there's different values of the goods? Obviously, a cow is worth a lot more than a banana or a bunch of bananas. How do you decide how much of that cow to give? Or how much meat from that cow to give in exchange for bananas? It's pretty subjective, right? Then we went to commodity money. And commodity money, it's a type of good that functions like a currency. If you go back in time to like the 1700s, 1600s, the colonists used pelts. I think pelts from, beavers or something like that, and dried corn in transactions. So, again, much more liquid because everybody needs fur to stay warm. They need corn to live on. So it wasn't too hard to find people to trade with. And then we went to metal commodities like gold or silver. Now, for centuries, money, if you're talking about paper money or paper currency, was backed by gold up until the 1970s here in the United States. So when we were backed by the dollar was backed by gold, you know, foreign governments were able to take their dollars and exchange them for a specific rate per ounce. I think it was $35 an ounce. But the problem with that is that it limits an economy from spending money and creating money because you couldn't create a dollar that didn't have a gold to back it. And in 1972, Nixon took us off the gold exchange, off the gold standard, I should say. And now you couldn't take your dollars and exchange them for gold. And the reason he did that is we had a trade deficit. Countries were dumping their dollars for gold. It was draining our gold reserves. And he had to stop it. Now, why is gold money? Why is it considered precious? Well, it's only considered precious because people want it. And that's the thing about money. Whatever form it takes, somebody has to want it. It's not necessarily useful, gold. You can't eat it, right? People say that all the time. Won't keep you warm at night. Doesn't pay interest. But people think it's beautiful. Most people, myself included, have a gold chain around my neck with a gold crucifix. And it's beautiful. And that's why gold is something that has worth. Now, the price of gold goes up or down in different currencies all the time, meaning, like, what is paper money worth? Gold does not change. It is always the same. Same is true of an ounce of silver. It doesn't change. What changes is the number of units of currency to acquire one. And as a currency loses value due to debasement, what is money debasement? Money debasement is printing it, creating it with no backing. That's also called a fiat currency. A fiat currency is backed by only the economy and the confidence in the government, confidence in politics in the country. So when you see gold going up in any currency in any country, it's not, nothing's changing with the gold. What's changing is the currency value. And that's why it takes more and more units of currency. Now, right now, gold is at an all-time high in almost every currency. And what does that tell you? It tells you that currencies or money out there is being debased, that it's being created and being diluted, and therefore it takes more units to buy an ounce of gold. So the question is, do you want to have fiat money, a piece of paper that is backed by nothing? Or do you want to have real money, or some people call it God's money, and have precious metals as your store of wealth? And that's what money is, if you think about it. It's a store of wealth. Whether that money is in a bank account, whether that money is in your house, whether that money is in your car, whether that money is in your stock mutual fund, whether that money is in gold or silver coins. It's all wealth, and it's all money, just in different forms. So how is money measured? How much money is out there? And what form does it take? Well, investors, economists ask this question to determine whether we have inflation or deflation, right? They look at the measures of money in circulation. So let's talk about how they measure money. Let's talk about the categories. M1. You'll hear a lot of time the M1 money supply. This includes physical denominations of coins and paper currency. Demand deposits, which are money in the bank, checking accounts, traveler's checks. Does anybody ever use traveler's checks anymore? I don't know. Remember American Express, traveler's check. Don't leave home without it. Was that the way it went? Anyway, I don't think people use traveler's checks anymore, but it's still in the definition of M1 money supply. So it's basically the money that's out there. It's the narrowest measure of it. It's all the money that's in bank accounts, in checking accounts, and in some cases, traveler's checks. M2 is a broader category. M2 includes all money found in M1, CDs, retirement accounts, money market funds. These are things that could easily be liquidated for cash. Now, obviously, M2 is going to be more than M1. Now, M3 is the broadest category of money. So it combines everything in M1, everything in M2, and adds to it institutional money market funds and other types of assets that are used in big ways between corporations. So M3 indicates a country's money supply or the total amount of money that's in the economy. So how is money created? How is it used to control the economy, to manipulate the economy? Well, if the Fed wants to increase the amount of money in circulation and therefore boost economic activity, what they could do is they could print it, which they do all the time, and then they will buy Treasury securities from the big Wall Street firms. And what that does, that puts cash into the hands of the banks, which makes it out in low interest loans and stimulates economic activity, whether that is buying a home because mortgage rates are low, buying a car, expanding your business. And the Fed does this all the time. Now, say we have inflation like we do now. What the central bank would usually do is the opposite. They would sell securities to the banks and pull money out of the system. And by pulling money out of the system, it slows inflation. There's less dollars out there. And it slows the economy. So the Federal Reserve could really manipulate the economy just through what they call open market operations. That's what that is. When they print money and buy treasury bills, they're creating money, they're stimulating the economy, and when they're selling them, they're pulling money out. Now, they also could control the economy through just interest rates alone, which they've done. We know they've raised interest rates many times in 2022 into 2023. And it's had somewhat of an effect on inflation. It's certainly slowing the economy. I mean, this past week, the GDP came out, and everybody was stunned that it was only up 1.6% for the first quarter. And that's with the government massaging the numbers. Imagine what the real number is. I'd find it very hard to believe that this administration will release economic numbers showing a negative GDP before the election. Imagine being the incumbent and going into an election with as the country's going into recession, Inflation is continuing to rise. People can't afford to live. It's bad enough what's going on. If we enter a recession, people are losing their jobs. People can't afford to put food on the table. Not very good for the current administration. Or at least historically it hasn't been, but who knows with the fraud that we have in our process, electoral process now, who knows? But the problem with creating money is that it is inflationary. It is the definition of inflation. Inflation is not prices going up. Inflation is the money supply going up. Prices going up are the result of the money supply going up, is the result of the creation of money out of thin air. Because think about it, it's diluting all the existing units of currency. If you have $1 trillion out there in your economy and you print another $1 trillion, you just devalued each dollar by 50%. Unless your economy is growing 100%, then you can do that. You can increase the money supply if the economy is growing at the same percentage. But if you don't have that economic growth, then you are creating inflation. And that's what we saw, what we're living through now in last year in 2022, is that during the last 20 years, all we've done is continue to go further and further in debt, continue to print money. The value of the dollars continued to decline. And then it really got out of control after the COVID stimulus and all the trillions of dollars that were handed out to everybody. And that money going into the economy, stimulating growth. Now, that's not organic growth. You know, that's artificial growth caused by the money supply. And it feels good at the time. Oh, we're getting all this money. Economy's growing. People are getting jobs. But there's always a price to pay for artificial stimulus. And that was a 10% inflation rate in 2022, which was probably closer to 20%. And a 3.5% inflation rate right now, officially, which is probably closer to 10. So what's the difference between money and currency? They're different terms, actually. I mean, currency is a form of money, but it's usually issued by a government. It's one type of payment that people use within a jurisdiction, a country, whatever. Money, though, refers to anything that has perceived value. Like I said, in essence, your home is money. It could be liquidated for dollars. An ounce of gold is money. Farmland is money. But currency is typically paper or coins issued by a government whose value changes all the time. And it goes back to the creation of money and whatnot. So we've come a long way with money, from beaver skins that we used to trade, shells, then we went to precious metals, coins, then we went to paper money backed by precious metals, and now most of the world, besides the East, countries like China, Russia, Turkey, other countries, they have gold. And we're going to talk a lot about gold in the second hour with my guest, and what's happening, how all the gold is really moving from the West to the East. And we also talked about the U.S. is supposed to have the most gold in the world. We're supposed to have 8,300 metric tons. Nobody's seen it since the 1950s. And do you remember when Ron Paul was trying to get an audit of the Fed? They did everything they could, and they were successful in preventing it from happening. Why would you try to resist an audit of your gold reserves unless they're not there? Now, certainly, even if the 8,300 metric tons are there, it's not nowhere near enough to back the trillions and trillions of dollars of liquidity that's out there. But why do we not see our gold? Now, meanwhile, China, and we haven't bought an ounce of gold. I've never heard the Federal Reserve say that the central bank has been buying gold ever. But we do hear about China's central bank buying every quarter tons and tons of gold, acquiring gold through the mines in their country. You know, when you mine an ounce of gold in China, it cannot leave the country. You got to sell it to the central bank. And whatever they say they have in gold holdings, I don't know, 4,000 tons or something. I'm not even sure what the number is. Experts believe that it's probably 4, 5, or 10 times as much. So to them, money is gold. It's not U.S. dollars. It's gold. So money is important, obviously, in its various forms. Historically, it's taken different forms. Now, the West especially, it's paper money. It's currency, whose value is only what is perceived based on the country's economy and politics and stability. And what about the United States? How is our stability politically, economically right now, socially? Not too good. And that's one of the reasons I think that we're seeing record high prices in gold. People are looking for alternatives. Now, while we're talking about money, what is wealth? Wealth is how much money you have, right? If you have $10, your wealth is $10. If you have $10 million, your wealth is $10 million. Now, there's a difference between wealth and whether or not you're rich. I've said this many times in this program. I tell it to my clients all the time. You could be wealthy but not rich. Well, what's the difference? Wealth is how much you have. You could have a lot of units of currency or a lot of units of precious metals or a lot of real estate. That's wealth. But rich is, do you ever use it for your enjoyment? I mean, wealth, money, whatever you want to call it, is potential. It is not anything. A $100 bill is nothing. It's a piece of paper. But it has the potential to be converted into a fine meal, although that's getting more expensive than $100 these days. It could be converted into housing, paying for your housing. It could be converted basically into anything. But until you do, it is potentiality. So if you die with a $1 million bank account, yeah, you died wealthy, but you live like you were poor because you'd never spent it. And that's the thing. What is money meant for? It's meant to be spent on something, correct? Otherwise, it does nothing. But trying to get somebody to spend the money that they have sometimes is the most difficult thing I do in my practice. And it's like having 15-gallon jugs of water in your garage. And you're thirsty all the time because you're afraid to have any of the water. Because you're afraid you're going to run out of it. And then you die of thirst. So what was the use? So think to yourself, with the money you have, the wealth that you have, are you rich or not? All right, let's take a quick break. You're listening to the Financial Physician Podcast. Don't go away.
Are you currently retired or planning to retire in the next 5 years? Hey, Lou Scatigna here, certified financial planner, personal finance author, president of AFM Investments. Why not join me for a comprehensive financial review at my downtown Toms River office? Banks are paying virtually nothing, and the stock market has become a risky casino. But there are ways to achieve reasonable returns without taking on big risks. Let me show you how. During our meeting, I will determine your net worth, find ways to maximize your income, and minimize your taxes. I'll review your estate plan and discuss strategies to protect your estate from nursing home costs. Managing your finances is more complicated than ever, but you don't have to go it alone. So make your no obligation appointment today by calling 732-905-8100. That's 732-905-8100.
Advisory services through Fortitude Advisory Group. Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer, a family-owned and operated premier septic installation and repair company with more than a decade of experience in the septic services. Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer provides full-service maintenance and cleaning services, pumping septic tanks, repairing broken sewer lines, cleaning of grease tanks for restaurants, as well as real estate septic inspections, repairs, and installations. Phone 732-600-8721 or go to jerseyshoreseptic.com to learn more. Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer, top quality work at the most affordable rates.
All right, welcome back to the Financial Physician Podcast. I'm Lou Scatigna, certified financial planner and your money doctor. We upload a new two-hour program each and every Sunday morning. It's up 7 a.m. Thanks for sharing the podcast with friends and family. That's how the show grows. You want to get in touch with me, my email address is lou@thefinancialphysician.com. Love your emails, and I respond to each and every one. If I don't, send it again, please. I get so much junk, it's unbelievable, in my emails. Now, are you a conservative? Are you a libertarian? Are you a Christian? Or maybe a gun owner? Do you oppose abortion or globalism or communism or illegal immigration and open borders? Are you against the United Nations and the New World Order and Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization? Do you believe in conspiracy theories like they stole the election? Do you believe we're living in the end times? Any of these things. If you answered yes to any of these questions, and there's many more, you're a potential terrorist, according to your official U.S. government documents. Now, there was a time when the word terrorist had a pretty narrow meaning. The official definition of terrorism is the use or threat of force with the intention of achieving a political goal. So that makes it pretty clear who should be covered as a terrorist. Mainly people like Osama bin Laden and Islamic jihadists and Hamas and things like that. But the Obama administration removed all references to Islam from terror training materials. Instead, the term terrorist was applied to a large number of groups of American citizens. And you won't believe what could label you a terrorist. And if you're labeled a terrorist, that means you have no rights, and the government can treat you like it treats terrorists that they're holding in Guantanamo Bay. Let's see if you're a potential terrorist. I'm not going to read all 72 categories, but according to official U.S. government documents, you're considered an extremist or a potential terrorist. Number one, those who talk about individual liberties. So if you talk about freedom and the liberties bequeathed you in the Constitution, you could be an extremist or a terrorist. If you advocate for states' rights, if you just want to make the world a better place, believe it or not, that is on the list. Those who are interested in defeating the communists. Those who believe that the interests of one's own nation are separate from the interests of other nations or the common interest of all nations. Globalism. Anyone that possesses an intolerance toward other religions. Those who take action to fight against the exploitation of the environment and or animals. So in other words, you have to be an environmentalist. You have to agree with climate change and everything else. You're a terrorist if you're anti-gay, anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim. You're part of the Patriot movement. You're in opposition to equal rights for gays and lesbians. You're a member of the Family Research Council. You're a member of the American Family Association. Boy, they're against families too. If you're members of the Border Patrol, the American Border Patrol, you could be considered an extremist. Wow. if you're a member of the Christian Action Network, if you oppose Agenda 21, if you're not sure what it is, look it up. If you're opposed to the New World Order, anyone that fears impending gun control or weapons confiscation. Who else do we have on this list? There's so many of them. It's just ridiculous. Anyone who believes in government conspiracy theories. If you visit extremist websites or blogs, so who determines what extremist is? Look, obviously the government does. If you attend a rally for what they consider extremist causes. If you suddenly acquire a weapon. So today I feel like I want to get a pistol for the first time. I don't like what's going on in the world with all these illegal immigrants coming in. I want to arm myself. You could be considered a terrorist at that point. What else do we have on here? I'm not reading them all, but you get the point. Anyone who's anti-abortion. Anybody who is concerned about illegal immigration, which is everybody in this country. So the majority of Americans, this is one of the number one concerns of the majority of Americans, is illegal immigration. The majority of Americans now, according to their own government, are potential terrorists. If you have a negative view of the United Nations, it's just crazy. Evangelical Christians. So that's your government. They could come after you now if you are basically anything that they don't want you to be. They don't. That is against their view of what you should be. And this is pretty scary stuff. It really is. This is exactly what George Orwell was worried about. And it's the exact opposite of what our founding fathers intended. So think carefully before you join any organization or have any thoughts that are on this list. All right, so the political persecution of President Trump continues with him being stuck in a courtroom in New York on a sham trial. But it seems that the attorneys representing this guy, the district attorney Bragg in New York, have made a serious error in the case in their opening statements. And a lot of people are talking about it. And this case is in serious trouble now. So what's the error they made? Prosecutors in New York have revealed what the other crime is that Donald Trump was allegedly trying to conceal when he was falsifying business records, and they claim it was to unlawfully promote his candidacy. The fatal error is that the New York statute they cite only applies to elections within the state of New York and not a federal election. So basically there's no crime here. So prosecutors can't use a federal law as the second crime. And remember, the Federal Election Commission declined on two occasions to prosecute Trump. That the hush money he paid Stormy Daniels was a federal violation. So this thing is not even a crime at all. So everybody knows that this will never get to appeals court. I mean, this will be overturned. But that's not the purpose of this. The purpose of this is twofold. A, to keep him off the campaign trail. You know, they're trying to toddle Biden all around the country to campaign, and I think it's just backfiring. But anyway, to keep him off the campaign trail and to try to get a felony conviction against him so they can call him a convicted felon, even though it would be overturned almost immediately in an appeals court. And that's true of most of these cases against Trump. Now, Jonathan Turley, the constitutional scholar that Fox News trouts out all the time, not a Republican, not necessarily a pro-Trump guy, says this whole thing is an embarrassment. This whole case is an embarrassment to the New York legal system.
Trump is right. I mean, this is an embarrassment. I mean, the fact that we are actually talking about this case being presented in a New York courtroom leaves me in utter disbelief. I mean, The arguments today did, in fact, capture all the problems here. You know, you had this misdemeanor under state law where that had run out. This is going back to related to the 2016 election. And they zapped it back into life by alleging that there was a campaign finance violation under the federal laws that doesn't exist. The Department of Justice doesn't view it this way.
This is lawfare. This is political persecution. It's the Biden administration going off after their competitor for the White House. This is stuff that happens in third world countries. All right, in a wide-ranging interview with NBC News, FBI Director Christopher Wray warned again of a potential terrorist attack on the United States, which may not be that different from what you saw against the concert hall in Russia a few weeks ago from ISIS-K. Well, no question, with all these terrorists coming through the border that you guys are allowing, sure, there's going to be a terrorist attack. There's going to be multiple terrorist attack, maybe on the same day. Maybe not only against individuals, maybe infrastructure. Maybe the electric grid. Who knows what's going to happen? Wray went on to explain that there are, quote, elevated fears about a coordinated terror attack in a public place. And he goes on to say, due to people being radicalized by Israel-Gaza war. Now, that's not why. It's because the radicalized terrorists are already here. So, and you see these protests at universities around the country right now. Half these people aren't even students there. These are radical Islamists. How did they get in our country? Who's coordinating all that? All these university things that are going on. And boy, I tell you, I've said it before, I would never send my kid to a university now, especially an Ivy League one, and pay $70,000 a year so your kid can't graduate because they're afraid of protests. USC announced this week that they're not going to have graduation. Imagine that. You go to school for 4 years, spend all the money, you're in HOC for the next 20 years, and you can't even have the privilege and honor of walking into graduation because these school administrators allowed these radicals to take over their campus. It's totally outrageous. Another outrage, the city of Santa Monica, California, is constructing a new apartment building for the homeless. It sounds nice. It sounds smart. Until you find out the cost is going to be $1 million per unit. How can the cost run this high? Are these going to be luxury apartments? Or maybe a lot of people who have their hands in the project here are getting rich. Corruption. Government is so corrupt on every level. I mean, the cost just doesn't make sense. $1 million. The apartment building, which will be built in Santa Monica, will be home to 122 apartments and two levels of underground parking, and is going to cost more than $123 million. A second design concept on the website found that the project could cost even more, totaling more than $200 million for 196 apartments. And it's not going to be completed to... It's not even going to start until 2028 and not be complete to 2030. So not only is this project ridiculously expensive, it's going to take years to complete. Where do I get my application? And you want to bet that that building is going to cost more than $1 million an apartment when all is said and done? I bet. Well, Joe Biden is strongly considering granting over 1 million illegal aliens amnesty by the stroke of a pen. Just in time for the 2024 presidential election, while we're in the midst of the worst immigration crisis in our country's history. He's going to do this through executive order. Can he do that? I don't know. But it doesn't seem. They keep talking about if Trump becomes president, he's going to be a dictator. This guy's prosecuting in so many different ways his opponent for president and ex-president. He's using executive order to open up the borders and now grant amnesty, forgive student loans, thumb his nose in the face of the Supreme Court, who said he can't do it. And now he wants to grant 1.1 million illegal aliens green cards on their way to becoming American citizens. And they're using all kinds of workarounds, trying to find loopholes to do this. And again, Biden's caving to the radical leftists in his party. Unbelievable. This is kind of scary. Do you like milk? I hate milk. I shouldn't say I hate milk. I just don't drink milk. I never have. I don't eat cereal. I don't drink milk. I do use maybe a drop in my coffee in the morning. That's about it. Anyway, the FDA says that bird flu has been discovered in grocery store milk. And they're saying that avian flu, the bird flu, has jumped to cows and that their milk has remnants of bird flu. That's nice to know. I would like to give my child a nice glass of milk with his peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Dr. Eric Topol, founder of the Scripps Research Translational Institute, said the finding of viral particles in milk on grocery store shelves means the outbreak is probably more widespread than we've known. The dissemination to cows is far greater than we have been led to believe. Now, the FDI comes out and assures everybody that the dairy supply is safe and that through pasteurization, the virus is deactivated. I don't know about you. Do you believe them after all the stuff they told us about COVID? I don't. I wouldn't drink any milk. I would start thinking about something else. They're trying to kill us, people. They're trying to kill us all. Depopulation. That's the word of the day. Do you like chocolate? How about milk chocolate? Well, cacao trees in West Africa, where 50% of the world's chocolate originates, are currently under threat by a virus that may jeopardize the global supply of chocolate. In a new scientific study, researchers from the Cocoa Research Institute of Ghana and the University of Kansas reported that the cacao swollen shoot root disease, caused by tiny insects called mealybugs, has endangered cacao trees in the Ivory Coast and Ghana. Harvests in Ivory Coast and Ghana have been cut by 15 to 50% since the virus has wreaked havoc on cocoa trees. So listen to this. To combat the pesky virus, how do you combat a virus? Chen Carpenter from the University of Kansas has advocated for vaccinating cocoa trees and spreading them out far from one another. Social distancing of the cocoa tree. Just like our 6 feet social distancing, which turned out to be a hoax. How do you vaccinate a tree? So now whatever the vaccination in the tree is, will be in the cocoa. It's the same thing. Unbelievable. But cocoa prices have been rising big time. Really big time. Get a load of this one. The White House has introduced a special routine for when Joe Biden departs and returns to the White House on Marine One helicopter. According to a report from Axios, advisors to the geriatric president are increasingly concerned that his inability to walk properly is highlighting his old age and declining mental condition. No crap. You ain't going to hide it. President Biden has introduced a change to his White House departure and return routine. Instead of walking across the South Lawn to and from Marine One by himself, he's now often surrounded by aides. With aides usually walking between Biden and journalist cameras positioned outside the White House, the visual effect is to draw less attention to the 81-year-old's halting and stiff gait. Some Biden advisors have told Axios they're concerned that the videos of Biden walking and shuffling alone, especially across the grass, have highlighted his age. Meanwhile, the White House has also taken steps to prevent the 81-year-old from falling over. The White House has taken steps to prevent the president from tripping, as he did last summer on a stage at the Air Force Academy. Biden increasingly has worn shoes with extra support, including a pair of black Hoka sneakers. Never heard of them. His doctors disclosed that the president suffers from spinal arthritis and mild sensory peripheral neuropathy of the feet. Yeah, that's the excuse to that. That's why he walks like that. Not that he's an old man, senile old man. That's exactly the way they walk. Besides the different footwear, he now enters Air Force One on a lower level, taking shorter stairs than the ones used on his early trips to climb to the plane's cabin. Unbelievable. So they're going to walk between him and the cameras, so the cameras can't capture his decrepitness. NBC News is reporting that Joe Biden is considering declaring a climate emergency, which would give him COVID-like powers to institute new Green Deal stuff without approval of Congress. And, you know, his poll numbers are terrible. He doesn't have the left-wing enthusiasm for his reelection campaign. He's got the Muslims that don't like him. And how could the Jews like him with everything that's going on with the anti-Semitism? And he is waffling on both sides on this. He's lost Hispanics. He's lost blacks. So he's considering trying to placate the far left in the country by declaring an emergency. This would give him the ability to implement socialist Green New Deal along with up to 130 measures without approval of Congress. You want to talk about who's the dictator again? Really? This climate thing drives me crazy. And I say it all the time. We're the only country that wants to do anything about it. Maybe us and a couple of countries in Europe. But the rest of the world isn't part of it. Every country in the world has to be part of it, or it doesn't matter. I use the analogy all the time. You can't be the only one in the pool that's not taking a pee. It doesn't matter. But they're so hung up. And this will take away your civil liberties, your ability to have a stove. You know all the things that he can do under that kind of emergency powers. They don't care. They really don't care. Another leftist, election-stealing Democrat, the governor of Arizona, or alleged governor, Carrie Lake won that election. It was stolen from her, just like it was stolen from Trump in Arizona. She continued her streak of vetoing a record number of bills on Tuesday by shooting down SB 1129, sponsored by Arizona State Senator Wendy Rogers, which would have allowed Arizona homeowners to remove an unlawful occupant or a squatter from their property. The bill would also deem that a person who fails or refuses to surrender possession of the property as directed by law enforcement is committing trespass. Do you think Hobbs vetoed the legislation? The bill fails to leverage existing legal mechanisms, respect for due process, the rights of lawful tenants. This drives me crazy. I just don't understand this. How could somebody steal your house and you can't do nothing about it? So this is what the legislature in Arizona wanted. She just vetoes it. She don't care what the people want. That's the thing about Democrats. Your elected officials elect laws and they just veto them. Or they just use executive order and circumvent the legislative process. How could anybody be against homeowners being able to kick out a squatter immediately? Not after a year in courts. Can you imagine going away on vacation? I'm going to Europe next week for 2 weeks. I come back and someone's living in my house. I live in a gated community, so that won't happen. But, you know, when I come home, someone's living in my house. And I can't get them out. I call the cops. I say, look, I was gone. Somebody trespassed and stole my house. Oh, no, we can't do nothing about it. And you can't turn off the utilities. You got to pay the property taxes. You got to pay the utilities. You got to pay the lawyer. Well, they're in your house destroying it. That's infuriating. Just like this thing where, and I don't fully understand it. I have to look more into it. Where somebody could steal your title and take a loan out against your house. They go to the county courthouse and somehow get the deed changed into their name, and they run and get a mortgage against your house. Oh, God. You know, in Ocean County here where I live, you know, I signed up to be on their email list. Anytime any of my records are touched, changed, anything, I get an email. And I can nip it in the bud. A lot of people don't know for years that somebody stole their title and took a $200,000 mortgage that is a lien on your home. And of course, they're not going to pay the mortgage. It's going to go in default. And before you know it, you're going to get a letter saying they're foreclosing on your house. And you go, wait a second, I don't have a mortgage on my house. Crazy, crazy stuff. Let's take another short break. On the other side of the break, we're going to have our special guest for the next 57 minutes. And you're not going to want to miss it.
AFM Investments' Luz Katigna has been serving Ocean County for over 35 years. AFM Investments brings a level of expertise, knowledge, and experience to the Jersey Shore that you would typically have to pursue with a premier investment firm on Wall Street. Whether you need income tax preparation or financial planning, he has the experience to help you with whatever your needs are. For more information, log on to afminvestments.net.
Registered Investment Advisory Services through Fortitude Advisory Group.
Do you have a home to sell? Do you need to buy a home? Or maybe you would like to consider a career in real estate? Well, you need to contact my brother, Mark Skatigna. He's the broker manager of Coldwell Banker Flanagan Realty on Route 70 in Manchester. Mark has helped so many of my clients with either the sale of their home or to purchase a new home. All of them could not have been happier with his help. What about an exciting new career in real estate? Maybe you're finding you have more time on your hands than you would like to after retiring from your full-time job and are also looking to make some extra income. With flexible hours to still enjoy your free time and income that could be limitless, Mark could train you to be as successful as you would like to be and enjoy a rewarding career in real estate. For help with any of your real estate needs, as well as any information on a career in real estate, call my brother Mark Skatigna at Coldwell Banker Flanagan Realty. His number is 732-657-6200. That's 732-657-6200. Mark Skatigna, Coldwell Banker Flanagan Realty. Give him a call. You'll be happy you did.
All right, welcome back to The Financial Physician, where we talk money, markets, politics, and upload a new podcast each and every Sunday, 7 a.m. Just go to thefinancialphysician.com, and we have all the radio show links there, as well as any videos. Now, I rarely had guests in the 24-plus years I hosted the radio show and now the podcast. Once in a blue moon I did, and about a month ago I had Peter Grandich on, and I got a lot of great feedback about that, and I asked you the following week whether or not you guys want me to have guests at all, or you just want me to do the full 2 hours. And overwhelmingly, you said a good guest once in a while, not every week, would be a good thing. And I have a great guest today. The guest I have today, his name is Andy Scheckman, and he is the CEO and president of one of the biggest precious metals dealers in the country, Miles Franklin. And I heard him about a year ago. He's all over the internet. And Peter Grandich was on his show a month ago. I saw Andy on his show. So Peter was kind enough to make the introduction between me and him. And he graciously agreed to come on the program. And it's a fascinating discussion. You know, we talk money, markets, and politics on this program. That's what we talk about in the following conversation. Now, this is videotaped, right? If you have the ability, pause the show, go to thefinancialphysician.com, go to the blog, and watch the interview. Watching an interview is always better than just listening to it. Now, if you're in your car and you can't do that, that's fine. We'll have the entire interview here. But I highly recommend that if you have the ability, that you do go to thefinancialphysician.com, click on the blog, and watch the interview between me and Andy Schechtman. Here we go. All right, I'm very excited because today I have a very special guest. As you know, I rarely have guests on this program, but you guys said you want a guest every once in a while, and I have a great guest today. His name is Andy Schechtman. He's the CEO and president of Miles Franklin, one of the biggest gold dealers, precious metals dealers in the country. Andy, welcome.
It is great to be here, my man. I really appreciate the invite, Lou. Thanks for having me.
I came across you on Liberty and Finance probably about a year ago. And as I was listening to you, I was like, this guy sounds just like me. Few people talk about the things that we talk about. And I was excited about it. Then I started following you, and now you appear every time I bring up YouTube. Your face is on on the front of every YouTube channel I bring up, and it's such a privilege to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Privilege is mine. Great to be here.
Well, we're living in, I think, the most risky times in my lifetime. I was 2 years old during the Cuban Missile Crisis, so maybe that was a more risky time, but as far as things go politically, financially, culturally, societally, geopolitically, there's so many things going on right now that almost look purposeful, almost look like something is trying to destroy America. So we're in very risky times right now. What's your evaluation of where we are in America in 2024?
I couldn't agree more. You know, I've taken somewhat of the fringe position that this really is too stupid to be stupid, the things that we are doing, that it just seems to be a planned demolition of the West. And as insane as that sounds, I mean, I back it with what I believe is considerable amount of evidence, and using Occam's razor, you know, the most logical outcome. I will back everything that we talk about here today with fact. The only piece where the dots need to be connected would be in regards to, could this really have been planned? You know, my mentor way back when, God rest his soul, was a man named Richard Russell. And Richard always used to say, this was 10, 15, 20 years ago, when the Fed had already, you know, in his mind, crossed the Rubicon, the government debt burden was so enormous that there would be no coming back. And he used to always say, even back then, that the Federal Reserve had two options, to inflate or default, and inflate or die. And I have taken the position recently that there is a third option, and that is to find a villain. And the things that I've been talking about for the last several years seem to be accelerating towards that place. And I'm happy to dig deep into it for you. But yeah, I do think that this is past the level of insanity. It's too stupid to not be planned, I guess, is the way that I would like to frame things moving forward here.
Yeah, one thing you could say is, okay, something like immigration. All right, that's a problem. But when you put together everything else that's going on, our soaring debt, the money we're sending overseas to finance wars, the whole COVID thing. I mean, it seems to be one thing after the other. And now we have political instability in the country. We have political persecution. Now we have the subversion of our universities, although I think they've been subverted for a long time. But now what we see going on in college campuses is crazy. It seems to be a plan. Let's start off talking about the financial situation here in the United States. It blew me away when I heard that every 100 days now we're adding $1 trillion to the debt. Our deficit's skyrocketing. Interest rates are going up, which means servicing that debt is more expensive. This is not sustainable, Andy, is it?
No, not at all. It is not sustainable at all. And I apologize if there's a little bit of noise in the background, including my dog from time to time. We have workers doing construction at the other end of the house, so we'll try and mitigate that best we can. But no, it is not sustainable. And you're right. It took 200 years to accumulate the first $1 trillion in debt, and we're doing it every 100 days. We're accumulating $100 billion in interest payments roughly every 100 days as well. But, you know, the numbers that we talk about are they flow off the tongue. Anything that ends in, you know, like million and billion ends in illion. It just, okay, fine. You know, we can all become, we will all, if we work, you know, into our long into our adult life, we will all have made over $1 million in most of us in our career. Whether or not you save it is another question, but you add up from the time you start working to the time you end working, you probably made over $1 million. It's doable. There's lots of billionaires out there, thousands of them now that, you know, it's obtainable. So the illion, well, it's not that big, right? A trillion seconds ago, Lou, was 31,688 years ago. And the $34 trillion debt, I don't think people even begin to understand just what that really means. But look at it this way. That doesn't take into account the big numbers. Medicare Part B right now is the largest liability of the government with an unfunded liability of $99.5 trillion. Medicare Part D, the prescription drug form of Medicare, is $22.1 trillion underfunded. Social Security, $77 trillion underfunded. You know, you're talking $175 trillion in underfunded liabilities in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and government and military pensions. And this is creating an environment of unsustainability. We've added almost $525 billion in interest payments alone just halfway through fiscal year 2024. And you realize that almost $9 trillion in government debt needs to be refinanced. About 25% of the entire government debt on balance sheet needs to be refinanced at much higher rates over the next 12 months. These are numbers that you can't make up. So we are broke. We are insolvent. We are right at the cusp of 130% debt to GDP. And I don't know that there's ever been a country in history that's come back from crossing that Rubicon. And yet we've given $200 billion to the Ukraine with nary any congressional oversight, where we're spending money at a level that is just incomprehensible, borrowing it to spend it, borrowing it to borrow to other countries. It just doesn't make sense at all. And when you throw into it a country that's lost in many ways, as you kind of mentioned at the beginning, it's barren. Where, you know, people tied together inner tubes with string and sailed from Cuba to leave an authoritarian regime to find justice. People walked from Central America. And I'm not talking about the 12 million people that have done this illegally over the last several years. I'm talking throughout history to find a better life where Lady Liberty was holding the scales of justice blindfolded. Now, I don't care what anyone says about, you know, what side of the aisle you're on. You have to ask yourself, is the perception around the globe or in this country that the Justice Department isn't two-tiered or is fair? Is that perception really true? Does the perception of the Justice Department or the weaponizing of it, is that something that, you know, is real? And I think it is. Or how about you mentioned the border crisis, 12 million people entering this country illegally. If just 0.1% of those people have bad intentions, that's 12,000 people. How about 3%? 360,000 people. That's an army. That's an invasion. When you talk about the lawlessness in the country, where cops can be beat up in broad daylight in Times Square, that's not the America I grew up in. When you talk about the move away from the nuclear family, from religion, respect, all of these things, the wokeness, where it's not a merit-based system anymore. It's a system, God knows what the criteria really is. And so when you talk about what made this country special, it was our respect for authority. No one said you couldn't challenge it politely, but the respect for authority, the respect for the nuclear family, the respect for religion, and the deviation away from a justice system that was always presumption of innocence before guilt, a system of immigration that welcomed everyone if done the right way through assimilation and you know, the way that all of our heirs came here the right way. All of these things are being compromised, and we are broke and we are insolvent. And that doesn't even begin to talk about what's happening outside the country. And just as a side note to all this, I would like people, and you mentioned that you listened to my conversation with Dunnigan last night. on Liberty and Finance. And I was talking a lot about the Cloward-Piven strategy. I won't jump into that today because we kind of just talked a lot about it, but I want people, please, if you're wondering what the hell's happened to this country, I want you please to Google Cloward Piven, Cloward-Piven. And these were husband and wife professors who taught at Columbia University. And I'll just preface it when you do your research to understand that Barack Obama, Anthony Blinken, the current Secretary of State, Attorney General Bill Barr and Eric Holder, previous Attorney Generals, Madeleine Albright, U.S. Ambassador to the UN, and most of all, Jared Bernstein, all went to Columbia. Jared Bernstein is someone we can talk about next, and he is the lead economic advisor to the United States government. He has a degree in music from Columbia, I believe, and a master's degree in social work from another school. And this is the lead economic advisor to the United States government. His main thesis is losing the world reserve status. And he's written reports on it called Dethrone King Dollar that was written or picked up in the New York Times when Trump slapped tariffs on China. He said, great, maybe we'll lose our reserve status. That was picked up in the Washington Post. But I want people to read the Cloward-Piven theory. Knowing that Jared Bernstein and Barack Obama went to this school and most likely learned this theory, because when you read it and you see what the hell's going on in our country, you will be like, my God, they're doing this. And
Andy, I hate to interrupt you for a second, but I read it years ago. So I'm very, very familiar with this, the Cloward-Piven strategy, and it's basically so overwhelm the country and sow chaos.
Yes.
To summarize it, right?
And to create a legion of voters. So all of these 12 million people that you let in, that you give entitlements to, will vote for you forever, because they'll never, you know, why would they ever vote for someone who wants to repeal all of the handouts and giveaways? And that's exactly what it is, to overwhelm the system and sow chaos. And in the large cities, and they actually mentioned that the media being complicit with their ideology is very important to the theory. Look at the media. I mean, and you wonder what's happened to journalistic integrity. As far as I'm concerned, you know, there are a lot of very well-read people out there reading the mainstream stuff, just reading the wrong stuff, because our media doesn't do a poor job of telling us what is happening, Lou. They do no job of telling us what is happening. So, yeah, it blew me away. And, you know, everything that I've talked about for the last several years, I mean, I've been saying this stuff, but not even realizing the Cloward-Piven strategy was there. When I read it recently, I was like, my God, you couldn't draw it up any better. It is being followed to the T. And it is too stupid to be stupid. It has to be planned. When I put this in context with what we've done around the world, it just solidifies my feelings 100%.
Yeah, Andy, it's amazing to me how many people are involved, how many people it takes to be coordinated, whether it's coordinating riots during the George Floyd situation or organizing the riots that are going to come one way or the other after the election, no matter who wins. Some are even saying that we're going to have a repeat of the 1968 Democratic Convention with riots outside the convention. So we're moving into a very serious time. And I think we're at the precipice of the Cloward-Piven strategy success. And that scares me. That's scary.
And it should scare you. Now let's transition. And going back to Jared Bernstein, whose whole thesis is to lose the reserve status. I often ask people, Lou, do you know what makes the dollar the world reserve currency? And I have found maybe one out of 50 know what it is. Biggest military, you know, most liquid currency, blah, blah, blah. No, none of that is true. You know, we were the world reserve currency after World War II. We took over for the pound sterling, and we backed the dollar by gold. We told other countries that you can always redeem your dollars for gold at a fixed rate of $35 an ounce. Well, that ended in 1971, largely because Charles de Gaulle from France was draining all the gold held at the treasury. He sent warships over to New York Harbor filled with dollars saying, give us our our gold, please, because they realized, they being much of the much of Europe, realized that we were printing more dollars to fund the guns and butter agenda, the Vietnam War, then we had gold backing it. And so they drained almost half the gold out of the U.S. Treasury when Nixon took then the unconventional step of closing the gold window, meaning we were fiat. We went back on our promise, no more exchanging your dollars for gold. But it was a couple of years later that Henry Kissinger went to Saudi Arabia and struck a deal with the Saudis, said, we'll protect you, and by extension, OPEC, we'll give you munitions, no one will ever mess with you. But for that, you're going to value dollars or oil in dollars, and any of the excess proceeds from the oil sales, you will reinvest into treasuries. And by doing that, we will protect you. And it's been that way for 50 years. And before we jump into this, I think it's important to understand that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia just recently said, not only was China our most important trading partner this year in oil, but for the next 50. Now, those words were chosen carefully because it was 50 years ago that we struck the petrodollar deal. So when we talk about Jared Bernstein's ideology of losing the reserve status, it centers around the petrodollar. And I think that's really important to understand as we move forward. So up to this point, any questions?
Well, why would Jared Bernstein want the United States to lose reserve status?
It's a privilege. Well,
What's the purpose?
It's a privilege we can no longer afford because of the trade imbalances and distortions that it creates. I think it's bigger than that. I mean, if you look at the 2022 balance sheet of the U.S. government, and that's a fair question, Lou, and I'll go into the whole thing after, but it's a fair question. You look at the 2022 balance sheet, and then the 23, I don't think has come out yet. Maybe it has, I got to check, but 2022 balance sheet shows roughly, you know, at the time, a $32 or $33 trillion debt. It's bigger now, we know that. Doesn't even talk about the unfunded liabilities, but it says we only have $5 trillion in assets as a government. The U.S. government, as of 2022, had $5 trillion in assets, of which the largest being student debt, 40% of the asset base of the United States government, $1.5 or $6 trillion in student debt. As crazy as that sounds, you know, Biden giving away a few billion, I mean, that's a drop in the bucket. It's illegal, but it's a drop in the bucket at the same time. So when we talk about the, you know, why you have $5 trillion in debt backing $150, $60 trillion in liabilities, we're broke, we're insolvent, and there is no way out. It's either inflate, default, or find a villain. And that villain would be Xi Jinping and OPEC and Putin. How could they do that to us? And I really do believe that'll happen. And let me take you down a path and see if we can make sense of this. So, and to figure out the why. So, why would they do this? Good question. Look, I don't think there are any other options. So we'll go down the path here. So when you realize that every single country on the planet has had to accumulate dollars in order to buy oil over the past 50 years, it has created a synthetic demand for the U.S. dollar. And what Jared Bernstein, I believe, said is, you know, look, now I don't know this to be fact, but it certainly makes sense. Like, if you want to lose the reserve status, there are a couple of things you need to do. You need to chip away at the hegemony of the dollar, or the linchpin of it, that is the petrodollar. And of course, the biggest way to do it would be to sign an executive order to go green. Thanks for the memory, Saudi Arabia. And, you know, we appreciate it, not for what it does to the ecology and the environment. That's great. But how about as it relates to the dollar being the world reserve currency? The linchpin of it is our relationship with OPEC and largely Saudi Arabia. And then, you know, the biggest one being as the world reserve currency, you do not have the right to say you can use it, Lou, but you know you can't use it, Mike, because we don't like what you've done. And that's what we've done. We've weaponized the dollar. And now we are taking the unconventional step. If you look at, I think it's tomorrow, they are voting on not only, you know, it's not enough to sanction the $380 billion in Russian Forex reserves. They're voting on confiscating it. and using it to fund the Ukrainian war. And in the same breath, you have our brain dead Treasury Secretary threatening China, saying if you aid Russia at all, forget about the fact that they're allies in the BRICS, charter members of the BRICS. But if you give them any money towards their war effort in the fight against Ukraine, we will sanction your companies, your banks, and Beijing itself. So, you know, forget about the fact that it's okay for us to help the Ukrainians to the tune of $200 billion since 2022 with no governmental oversight. No congressional oversight as to where that money went. But we'll give them $200 billion, but... Well, China, if they want to help Russia, no, that doesn't work. Same thing, our brain-dead Treasury Secretary in the backyard of the BRICS in Brazil just a few weeks ago saying this, that, you know, in a member of the BRICS saying not only should we, you know, hold and confiscate or sanction the Russian assets, but we need to confiscate them, us and the European Union and the United Kingdom. She's saying this in Brazil. And this is why I say, is it too stupid to be stupid? How could you say these things to countries that are aligned with this union that includes Russia? So by weaponizing the dollar and by signing an executive order to go green, you have really, I think, pushed you have pushed these countries into finding a solution. And I just want to say one other thing in terms of the way the world looks at us as being hypocritical. You know, we invaded Iraq 20 years ago under the guise of weapons of mass destruction. And oops, sorry, we didn't find them. And we've destroyed their country, and we put in a new regime. And here we are 20 years later, still occupying Iraq, still sanctioning 14 of their banks for having the audacity of trying to buy liquid natural gas from Iran and trading with Iranian banks that were sanctioned. And so we sanctioned the 14 banks in Iraq. And so Iraq made $95 billion in oil revenue in 2023. And towards the end of the year, they said, listen, you know, we'd like a billion of that $95 billion, please. You see, they're not even allowed to control their own oil revenue from their natural resources. Excuse me. It's held at the Federal Reserve in New York. So we said at the time, that's not a good time right now. We'll get that to you later. So what did they do? They made trading in dollars illegal. If you own a business and trade in dollars in Iraq, you will go to prison and your business will be taken. They're in the process of kicking out all Western coalition forces out of their country. They have officially applied to the BRICS. And as of January of this year, all green dollar bills are out of the country. None, zero. So we are viewed as hypocritical. We can do this, but you can't. So when you talk about how does this all start, you weaponize the dollar and you sign an executive order to go green. That gets the ball rolling in a very big way. And that's exactly what Jared Bernstein would want. And then you connect it with what's happening here at home. And you have to ask yourself, I mean, are we living in a dystopian movie or is this really actually happening?
We're talking with Andy Shechtman, who is president and CEO of Miles Franklin, which is one of the biggest gold precious metals dealers in the country. But he's much more than that. That's why he's all over the internet talking about things that are going on. You mentioned in the BRICS here, how serious is the BRICS challenge to the U.S. dollar and to the United States within the world? I mean, they're getting bigger. They're getting stronger. There's talk about their own currency backed by commodities. Are they a real threat to the economy, you know, and standing in the United States?
I'm very fond of a phrase called logarithmic decay, which is little by little by little, then all at once. It's kind of like you're sailing down Niagara River, 300 years ago. You didn't know what was up ahead, but you notice the pitch slowly starting to turn and you hear something out in the distance. You're not sure what it is as you're going a little faster, bang. And I think that there are a lot of people who hear about the BRICS. First of all, let's understand that it's 17, 18 years strong now that they've been doing this. But the little by little by little is poo-pooed. It is ignored. It is ignored because it takes too long in the making. But let's talk about what they are right now. There are 10 countries, five that were just admitted, including Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Two big, big, big names, of course, along with Iran, Ethiopia, and Egypt, that joined the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. There are 10 countries in it right now. Those 10 countries already, before the 36 that have already formally applied, and another 25 or so that have informally applied, just those 10 alone have a larger swath of human population, a larger percentage of global GDP, three of the four largest nuclear arsenals on the planet, the majority of all the rare earth metals needed in battery production, the majority of all the world's commodities, from precious metals to base metals. They produce more wheat than the West does. They are a country that controls the majority of the shipping lanes in the Straits of Hormuz and the Red Sea and all throughout the Eurasian continent. And they are growing with scope and legitimacy and size. Now, I've talked about for years that you will see a combination of the folks on the Belt Road Initiative, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and the Eurasian Economic Union will all meld with the BRICS. Now, the latter first, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which, by the way, Iran has joined and Saudi Arabia has, is the largest regional financial and military organization on the planet. It's Chinese army. And the Eurasian Economic Union are all the countries that end in STAN. And all of these countries are, in one way or another, aligned with the Belt Road, with the BRICS. There's great symmetry there. In fact, the president of Belarus just called for a summit to bring the Eurasian Economic Union and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization into the BRICS fold. I've been saying this for 3 years. They're the same companies with the countries with the same interests. But if you go to the Belt Road Initiative, it's the largest infrastructure project in human history. As it is right now, it's 75% of global GDP, or a human population, 50% of global GDP. It is bridges and roads and maritime channels and train tracks that will connect the largest infrastructure project ever attempted, parts of Asia and Africa and South America and Europe, excuse me, and battling some pretty heavy allergies, so I apologize.
Oh, yeah, anyways, all of us are. It's time of year.
Yeah. Anyways, what you're watching is a situation unfold that, you know, you put all these groups together, Lou, you're talking 85% of human population, the majority of all the commodities on the planet, the majority of the shipping lanes, a much bigger military might than the United States and the West. And yes, I believe it is very, very, very legitimate. And, you know, for example, every OPEC country is on the Belt Road, every one of them. That's interesting. The United States isn't. And when you realize that these countries in and of themselves for all of these years could have never stood up to the West, to the 500-year domination of and suppression of the West, not just the United States, but all the European countries before them. But now they're finding safety in numbers. And there's a man that I respect greatly. His name is Zoltan Pozsar. And Zoltan used to work behind the scenes at the New York Federal Reserve. I think he's at UBS right now, but in the private life, but he understands the plumbing of the system, the financial system, better than anyone. And he said, we are entering a new system now called Bretton Woods III. And Bretton Woods I is when we took over for the pound sterling at the end of World War II. Loosely, Bretton Woods II would have been when we became the petrodollar. Bretton Woods III is a system, he says, that will be all about commodities and transparency, not opaque debt instruments. And I think he's very right on that, because the Bank of International Settlements, which is the most sophisticated, influential bank on the planet, is the central banker's central bank. They reclassified gold in 2019 as the only other tier one reserve asset. So when you see these countries accumulating gold at the way that they are and selling U.S. treasuries, there is no question to me but that we are entering a new system where it will be about he who owns not just the gold, but the commodities wins. Now, when you look at China, they're striking deals all over the world. They're going into Africa. They're going into South America. They're building oil refineries and gold and silver mines and building roads and bridges and helping these countries industrialize in a cooperative manner. And, you know, you see this massive growing trend of commodities being more important. As an example, they're striking deals with Brazil for soybeans and corn. Brazil is the second largest exporter of corn in the world. They are now accepting yuan instead of dollars for corn. And when Brazil sells their corn for yuan, that yuan is immediately convertible into gold on the Shanghai Gold Exchange, which is what? The only other tier one reserve asset. The Chinese bought the London Metals Exchange. Most people don't know that. It's not the LBMA where precious metals are traded, which they're buying all of, but the LME is base metals, steel, copper, zinc, that kind of stuff. And now they're warehousing much of the metals that are traded on the LME in China. They are striking deals all around the world for commodities. They bought the LME. They're buying the soft commodities. They're buying the precious metals. They understand this, and they are building a stockpile using our trade imbalance to de-dollarize and de-treasurize, and using the proceeds to gobble up anything that is not nailed down. They have bought for 17 straight months in a row, China has. And a report, an analyst from Bank of Montreal said, now their numbers are way understated. They're buying way more than they're telling us. So I think you're witnessing a slow, little by little by little by little by little, then bang, all at once transition. When you realize that the United Arab Emirates, the number seven largest producer of oil in the world, an OPEC member who was just admitted into BRICS, said, we don't want to take dollars anymore for oil. This hypothesis, this thought process is not so far out of line. And here's how it happens. We push the world into a corner. We say, if you don't align with us ideologically, we're not just going to sanction your assets. We're going to take them, and then we're going to give them to your foe who you're fighting a war against. And I would say, I mean, if you and I were having a beer together right now, I might use some profanity and say BS. You can't do that. You cannot do that when the world views you as hypocritical. It is not for the world reserve currency to make these decisions. Maybe for world opinion, but not for us. We can do it. You can't. Bad idea. Or maybe it's too stupid to be stupid. Remember, Jared wants to lose the reserve status. So sign an executive order to go green, which is the linchpin of the hegemony, and then go around the world and bully people in a hypocritical manner, and then tell them they're sanctioned if they don't align ideologically. Ain't going to happen. But I will say this to you. You and I grew up in a time, and you're a little older than I am, and I'd say you probably experienced a better America than even I did. I was a kid in the 70s, and which was great. I left my house at 8 a.m, didn't say goodbye to my parents, and came back covered in mud, after dinner, and no one was worried, and you slept with your doors open. This was Minneapolis back then. I left Minneapolis because of the George Floyd riots and defunding of the police. The world that we have grown up in is not the same. And if it were, if the people around the world looked at this country as the beacon of liberty, not two-tiered liberty and justice, but real justice, if they look at this country as one that welcomed everyone in the world in a orderly and fair manner, not allowing 12 million people in illegally to destabilize the country, a la Cloward Piven strategy. If we were a country that embraced law and order instead of having complete and total lawlessness in our cities, a country that is broke and insolvent, not just financially, but in many respects, morally, our culture being whitewashed out from underneath us, we don't respect the things that we used to, like God, like the nuclear family. We are woke. We reward people for God knows what instead of merit. All of these things that made this country great, you have to question yourself, what the hell's happening to this country? And that's not lost on the rest of the world. So here's how it happens in a nutshell. Here's how things get very serious. Saudi Arabia says, listen, you guys are going green. We respect that. You've provided us military support for the last 50 years. Thank you. We've just said China is our most important trading partner this year and for the next 50. Those words are important. Those numbers are important. And look, we've joined with our brothers and sisters on the Belt Road, all of us. And, we also now joining the BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. We are basically speaking for 90% of human population, pretty damn close to it. That's not going green. And that we have a similarity in our alignment. Whereas if we don't align with you ideologically, you could potentially confiscate our assets. So here's the deal. We're not going to take dollars for oil anymore. And bang, just like that, it's the all at once moment where every country in the world that has created the synthetic demand for the dollar by having to stockpile it to buy oil no longer has to do that. And the dumping of dollars globally across the whole world, those dollars flow across the ocean and hit our shore. That's hyperinflation. The byproduct of hyperinflation is interest rates driven by the market, not by the Federal Reserve, that have to rise parabolically to compensate for the parabolic increase in inflation as all of those dollars overwhelm us. No one needs them anymore. There's way more dollars across the globe than there are here at home. They overwhelm the issuer, us, creating hyperinflation. Now, the interest rates have to compensate. You can't have 30% inflation and 5% interest rates. Your currency dies. So you have 30% inflation or 30% interest rates. Now, this is where the third version of or the third option, inflate, default, or find a villain, those sons of bitches. How could they do this to us? They dump the dollar after everything we've done for them. Now, let's not forget about the weaponizing and the executive order. Let's not talk about that. But let's just simply say, how could they do this to us? And it creates hyperinflation. Now, here's the bad part. Everyone dumps the dollar, it falls. Interest rates spike to the moon, creating hyperinflation, or hyperinflation goes and interest rates spike to the moon as a result. The stock market is inversely correlated to that. The bond market is inversely correlated to that. The real estate market is inversely correlated to that. The banking system, which is over-leveraged and undercapitalized, is massively inversely correlated to that, as are the insurance companies, who are about 90% deep in U.S. treasuries. The whole system resets. There is your Klaus Schwab moment, and there is your option three, the villain. How could they do that to us? But have no fear, because the number two in charge at the U.S. government, I said number one being Jared Bernstein, who in many respects is the architect of this, in my mind, number two is Lael Brainard. If, God forbid, this administration wins again, Lael Brainard will very likely be the head of the Federal Reserve. She was number two under Powell for several months before moving to the White House as the number two in terms of economic policy. Before that, she was at the Treasury. She is a modern monetary theorist. She worked with MIT in development of the new central bank digital currency. She just ran point about 6 months ago for FedNow, which is being piloted. That is like Venmo or Zelle backed by the Fed. It will replace checks and wires probably by the end of the year. Instant settlement, if you will, backed by the Fed. So, you know, if you're going to issue a CBDC and people don't want to take it for the loss of privacy and that dystopian reality, but what happens if they're forced to take it? They're forced to take it because everyone is in the same boat at the same time. And that is, if that happens, if we force the world through our actions and our stupidity and destabilizing the country to dump dollars and treasuries in form of in favor of something else like gold or a new BRIC settlement currency, whatever it is. And you have this event where you point to a villain and everything collapses, the dollar, the bond market, the stock market, the real estate market, the banks and the insurance company, have no fear. Lou, just sign on the dotted line, take our new central bank digital currency and we'll make you whole and you'll be just fine. We will replace what was lost in your bank account and in your insurance policies and in your 401k. Now, this is the point where Occam's razor comes in. Up to this point, everything has been factual. Is this what they're trying to do? Don't know. But when you have the number one in charge in terms of economic policy, who went to Columbia, who understands the Clower-Pittman theory, and his whole doctrine is to lose the reserve status, pretty compelling. You couldn't draw it up any better. And then the number two is a modern monetary theorist who wants a CBDC, who has worked with MIT in development of it, and just ushered in Fed. Now, you have to wonder, is it too stupid to be stupid? Is it too stupid to be planned? Or are our politicians that stupid? I'll leave that up to you and everyone else out there. But to me, this is, you couldn't draw it up any better. And when you realize these people actually think this way, you have to give this a little bit of thought. And I'll let people decide for themselves, where are we in this matrix?
Andy, you're a gold guy. You're CEO and president of one of the biggest precious metals companies in America. The answer to all these things that you just brought up, in my opinion, is gold. I mean, you said every stock market gets hit, banking system gets destroyed, the value of your currency goes down, you have hyperinflation. I've always looked at gold as financial life insurance for that event. Never as a really an investment, but just protection against when that event comes. And I saw that event coming 15 years ago. I didn't know when it was going to come, but I think it's going to come in our lifetime. And I think we're getting closer and closer to it. Is gold the answer? And we just hit record prices, a little bit of a correction here now, which is, I think, is healthy. Where do you see, are you seeing in your business the retail demand for gold, or is this something that's central bank oriented?
Well, to me, the central banks are not only the wealthiest traders on the planet, they're the most well-informed. And they know the playbook. When you see the reclassification of gold by the most powerful bank on the planet as tier one, the only other tier one asset, and the central bank's the most well-informed in the world, buying it at a level the world's never seen, that to me is all you need to know. It is considered wealth that has outlived two world wars, German hyperinflation, the Great Depression, every pandemic. It is wealth that is immutable, that is not someone else's liability. There is no counterparty risk. Think the treasury market. Think of Russia. The counterparty risk of a country that is willing to sanction if we don't align ideologically and confiscate, there's great counterparty risk. There's default risk with U.S. treasuries. And not only that, gold has outperformed. You take Bitcoin out of the equation, which started from zero. Gold has outperformed every single asset, every one, since 2000. And it's averaged about 9.1% compounding per year. The S&P 500, just over 7%. The bond market, a fraction of that. And the bond market has, as we now see, the risk of a government that is willing to do these things. So, yeah, I think to me, gold is wealth that has outlived, you know, everything the world has ever thrown at it. As I said, two world wars, German hyperinflation, the Great Depression, and every pandemic, everything the world has thrown at it for 5,000 years, it is wealth. It is transitioning. And I think the big money understands that. So when the central banks are buying it, most important. But what is very strange in this run is, to your point, no, the if you look at the ETF participation, it's at a 45 degree angle down. The public has been selling into the rally. You look at the retail sales of the U.S. Mint. I'm a U.S. Mint authorized reseller and very keenly watch these numbers. They're at lows that we haven't seen since prior to 2019. You look at the Chinese ETFs, they're going up so fast that they keep getting triggered stops. They're creating problems with the demand. You look at the Chinese public, they're buying hand over fist. And so as the American public has been infatuated, and maybe rightfully so, with NVIDIA and AI and Bitcoin, it's been quite a run. They've ignored the tortoise in the race, who continues to march forward at a substantial clip at all-time highs, and yet very little in the way of public participation in the West. I look at that as maybe one of the biggest contrarian indicators of my career. And I literally think that most of this blame falls on the heels of the media, who doesn't do a bad job. They do no job of telling us what is happening and what is really important. And so, yeah, I think people can't get out of the way of what they don't see coming. And most of the public doesn't see this coming. And that's the sad part. You can be very well read and read the wrong stuff following the mainstream media. I think you get a far better education of what's really happening, an appraisal of what's happening, by finding alternative media. And look, there's a fine line between conspiracy and reality. The scariest part about all this, Lou, is that everything I've been talking about going all the way back to 2019, look at, I've done almost 4,000 YouTube videos all on this topic. And it's all happening, and faster than I ever would have expected. So what is gold? Gold to me is wealth that the biggest, smartest money in the world is accumulating. And you don't look at it as an investment. You look at it not to get wealthy, but that it is wealth. And if you own enough of it, you'll be wealthy too. You go back to the beginning of time, pharaohs and kings and queens and emperors, or in the Bible, it's mentioned numerous times, hundreds. It's wealth. And I think that, you know, the more we try and get away from that, the greater the realization that it's just been viewed throughout all of time as an immutable form of wealth. And that's not changing. In fact, I believe it is being remonetized, revalued, and replacing in many ways the U.S. Treasury and the U.S. dollar across much of the globe. And I think the trend, a la tier one revision, is just beginning.
Hey, Andy, do you think that, the United States is supposed to have the largest gold hoard, 8,000 tons? Supposed to. Do you think we actually have that gold?
Well, ask yourself, why is every attempt to have it audited? Hasn't been audited since 56. Why the hell does it keep getting shot down? Why, when Ron Paul says, we want to audit the Federal Reserve, I think Rand tried to do it too, we want to audit the gold held at Fort Knox, and every time it's no, no, and no. Why? We supposedly have 8,300 metric tons. Well, Alistair McLeod, one of the smartest men I know, believes that China has over five times that amount, closer to 38,000 metric tons, 20,000 held by the state and 18,000 by the people. They have been pushing their people to buy gold so hard for the last several years. You know, it's they understand, they think in terms of decades. They think in terms, and I can prove that to you by some comments that were made by the chairman of the Shanghai Gold Exchange and also by an analyst for a finance minister for Russia. They understand what we're doing by suppressing the paper price. But yeah, I think that this is inevitable, to be honest with you.
And what would happen? What would happen if, I've heard somebody say this, I don't know who it was, I don't know what program or whatnot. He said one day, China's going to drive into a gigantic stadium, truckloads of gold bricks, and say, this is what we have. The West, show us yours.
That's the point. You know, we haven't shown it. And this belongs to the people. So where are those 8,300 metric tons that we supposedly hold, and why won't you show it to us? And it's interesting, you know, there's been a lot of repatriation. And again, what is gold? It is an asset that is simultaneously not someone else's liability. So there's been a good deal of repatriation out of the New York Federal Reserve and by the Bank of England, out of the Bank of England. You know, it started in 2010. You had the German Bundesbank demand their gold be sent back that we had been holding at the New York Fed, largely because it's very close to, you know, to the NYMEX and the COMEX, so it's convenient when you're trading it. But shortly thereafter, we had the Bank of Austria, Hungary, Turkey, Poland, the Dutch National Bank, the Czech National Bank, all of these banks that give us back our gold. Well, there was recently, I think, Representative Mooney, I believe, from West Virginia, petitioned, even through the Freedom of Information Act, the Fed, and said, how much gold has been given back to these countries, and they won't answer it. Really strange. And why won't they tell us how much gold that we have? These are all very strange questions, but you're right. You know, in the end, there's an old saying, he who has the gold makes the rules. And there's no question about it, I believe, that China is the largest producer, the largest accumulator. They've been mining gold that was uneconomical for years using our trade imbalance. They were mining gold when it was, you know, $400 an ounce. It probably cost $1,500 to pull out of the ground. Well, they look smart now, using that massive trade imbalance of us buying their trinkets and party favors. They were putting it to good use. So yeah, I think there will come a time where it's, you know, pull down your pants and show us yours, we'll show you ours. And if that doesn't happen very quickly, you know, it just only adds to the lack of trust that the West has and accelerates the ultimate shift away from what is a system based upon opaque debt promises to one that will be about transparency and commodities. That's Bretton Woods 3. And it's exactly what I think ultimately will happen.
Yeah. And boy, what would happen to the dollar, financial markets, if the world knew we didn't have the gold that we say we do? You're looking at a currency crisis. You're looking at hyperinflation.
Immediately.
Yeah, immediately.
Immediately, because right. it's a bigger lie. If we don't have that, what else have we been lying about?
All right, let's. We're going to run out of time soon, so I want your take on the coming presidential election, the political environment we're living in now. I never ever thought that we'd ever see the persecution of a past president like we're seeing now on such dubious charges, run by Democrats and Democrat strongholds. I never thought we'd see this in America. What's your take on the election? And what do you think is going to happen? As I said earlier, I think there's civil unrest no matter who wins. If Trump wins, the left is going to go nuts and make the George Floyd riots look like nothing, because they're very organized and very well funded. We know that. And if Biden wins, the Trump people are going to say they stole it again. And our democracy is at risk. So I think that we're entering a very dangerous 6-7 months in our country's history. What do you see?
Not only that, we have there will have been up to 200 meetings, BRICS related, in Russia leading up to October, big meeting where they're going to announce the new countries that have been admitted. 36, I believe, have formally applied in October, and then the election in November. And you're right, no matter what happens, you have half the country pissed off. And they always used to say the right was so radical. To me, the left is far more scary than the right, and the things that they are willing to do. It's unbelievable, as far as I'm concerned. And you're right. It's a scary outcome no matter what.
the process, when people said there could be a civil war. Yeah, right. Well, I mean, it's starting to think more and more. I start to think is more and more possible. States wanting to secede from the Union. You know, I will tell you this, that I think there will be more chaos if the perception is that the election was not fair than anything else. If the perception is that the election was stolen, there will be chaos and it will be a scary place to be. I hope that doesn't happen, but I think you're right. Either way, you have half the country furious. My bigger question is, how the hell does half of the country think that this current administration, that the President Biden has the ability to manage the country today, let alone another 4 years? I find it just shocking that there are people who actually believe that he is doing a good job and he has let this country fall apart underneath him. And all along continuing to blame the previous administration and hunt them down on a witch hunt, charges that just seem to be absolutely ridiculous. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. I mean, I am a libertarian at heart. My parents were hippies when I was growing up. And, you know, I learned to be respectful of everyone, regardless of their ideology, regardless of their orientations or their preferences. You know, I'm not right, I'm not left, I'm libertarian. And I think the government should get the hell out of the way and let us do our thing and protect us, do the infrastructure, the military, the police. Great, get the hell out of the way with everything else. That's my view, but I just think it's a shame because you're right. I don't think people are really thinking what it's going to look like after the aftermath of the election. I think it's going to be a very scary place. And this is why you own gold and silver, not to become wealthy, but because it is wealth. Why else would the central banks be buying it at record levels? Why else would they be repatriating it from the Bank of England and the New York Fed? And why else would the most sophisticated, well-funded, well-informed bank in the world, influential bank in the world, reclassified as the only tier one? This is why you own it, because we are we're very close to crossing that Rubicon of God knows what. And I think you're hitting it right on the top of the head of the nail, whereas what's it look like at the end of the election? And if we get there, scary is for sure.
Andy, let's wind up. Tell us a little bit about your company. And you guys cater to retail, right?
Yeah, we've done almost $10 billion in sales in the last 34 years. We've never had a customer complaint. We are licensed and bonded in the state of Minnesota. I left my corporate office there even when I moved to Florida in the middle of the George Floyd riots. Because it is the only state that regulates what is a federally non-regulated industry. People can go to our website at milesfranklin.com. That allows for limited purchasing up to 10 grand. But to get really good prices that we don't publish, send us an email. Say Lou sent me at info@milesfranklin.com. You can ask questions about anything you've heard on this show, we'll answer them. You can just request a price sheet. You can ask about 401k rollovers or IRA transfers, any of these things, and we will help you. That's info@milesfranklin.com. Say Lou sent me, and just ask for the price list if that's what you want. Our brokers are dear friends of mine outside of business, most of them since childhood, long before I started this company. Many of them have degrees from places like Wharton or master's degrees from Temple University or spent many years on Wall Street. They are not order takers. They can speak to you about politics, geopolitical events, or anything you've heard here, or just answer your questions on purchasing metal. info@milesfranklin.com for the very competitive price list or any questions that you have whatsoever. And it's non-obligatory.
Andy Scheckman, I want to end this with, I meant to bring this up early because I think it's fascinating. I think your dad gave you the best advice or command, I don't know what it was, when you first started working with him way back when, about what to do every couple of weeks with your paycheck. Share that with us.
Yeah, it's the best gift I've ever been given. The gift of letting compounding work for you instead of against you. And it's largely shaped the way I look at gold and silver. He said to me, I was 19 years old when we started this company 34 years ago, you'll buy something every 2 weeks, period, or I'll fire you. Okay, cool. Well, I've owned the company and ran it for over two decades. He won't fire me anymore, but I've honored my promise to him. For 34 years, every 2 weeks, I bought some form of gold or silver, period. I have never missed a two-week period.
And it's amazing when you let the laws of compounding work for you, whether you're talking about working out or dieting or anything that is important to you, being habitual and methodical and paying yourself first has allowed me to let the laws of compounding work for me instead of against me. And it's the greatest gift I was ever given. I mean that. And because without it, you, all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're much older. You may still feel like you're 19 in your brain. Body doesn't agree. And if you don't pay yourself first, chances are your wallet won't agree with you either. So always pay yourself first, no matter what, if it's 1 ounce of silver or if it's a $10 bill in a jar, whatever it is, pay yourself first. And someday you'll wake up and say, my God, that works, because, you know, time goes by. But saving is never fun and easy unless you make it a goal. And it's great to look back and say, thank you, Dad. It was literally the best gift he's ever given me, unquestionably. And I make everyone I hire do the same thing. And they all come back to me a few years later and say, Andy, you have no idea how much I appreciate what you did for me, because I would have pissed it away. And now I have a huge growing savings that not only that, it's appreciated nicely.
Andy Shechtman, thanks for joining us on the Financial Physician Podcast. I know that my listeners are going to be fascinated with this talk. Really, very, very good. Thanks for joining us. You've been very generous.
I'd love to come back, Lou, anytime. We have a mutual friend in Peter, and he speaks very highly of you. And that's all I needed to know to want to come here on the first time. If you'd have me back, I'd love to pick up where we left off. Quite frankly, I think between now and the election, there'll be lots to talk about. So color me interested. And I'll look forward to picking up where we left off, hopefully real soon.
I'll definitely have you back. Thanks so much, Andy Shechtman.
See you, buddy.
All right, I hope you found that interview to be as fascinating and informative as I did. Sounds a lot like a host of a podcast that you listen to regularly, huh? But he's just much more smarter than I am. You know, Andy is, like I said, he's the head of a precious metals firm, but he's more than that. He's a guest on so many radio shows, podcasts. The day I recorded my interview with him, my interview was one of six for that day. So if you go on YouTube and you type in his name, Andy Shechtman, you're going to find tons of videos. I think he said he's done 4,000 interviews the last few years, because he's a smart guy and people like talking to him. And he's got a very calm manner about him. You know, doesn't take a breath too often. So it was a little difficult for me to get my two cents in. But why not? I mean, the guy was great, I thought. If you think it was interesting and other people should hear it, send them the link from the financialphysician.com website, the blog. Send it to friends and family. Really do appreciate that. All right, let's end with this. A group of prominent Trump-hating media commentators have been meeting weekly for 2 years on how to bring down Trump. These are the people. Bill Kristol. He's a never Trump. You know who Bill Kristol is. He's gone wacko, this guy. Andrew Weissman. Who's Andrew Weissman? Well, he was Bob Mueller's attack dog. Trump-hating deep state prince. Lawrence Tribe. He was part of the Biden-Obama group, in a Harvard nutcase. George Conway, you know who he is? He is, what's your name's husband? Kelly Conway, that's right. Remember him? He trashed Trump, and she was like one of his top aides. In the article that I was reading on this, they called George Conway the most abusive husband ever. To trash his wife's employer and president of the United States, by the way. About Jeffrey Toobin, he was a CNN commentator. Remember, he got caught what they used to call abusing himself on a conference call. But Democrats can get away with that. That's just nothing to that. Remember John Dean, the deep stater who set up Nixon? And then he testified in the Trump impeachment trial. So these people have been meeting every week, strategizing how to take down Trump. And I guess it's not illegal to do that. now they're using the term journal lawfare, just like lawfare in the courts. So they're doing everything they can. The deep state, they don't want Trump to be president no matter what. And I believe they will stop at nothing. It doesn't matter whether it's fair, whether it's legal, doesn't matter. Anyway, God, I feel bad for Donnie there. How would you like to be him? I mean, wouldn't mind having his money, but the persecution and just the nonstop, since he came down the escalator, it's just been nonstop harassment in every way, shape. And even when he was president, he couldn't get much done because the deep staters that are the bureaucrats that run the government were just dragging their feet. They didn't care what he ordered or said. They openly refused his orders. I mean, they just didn't do it. And that's the problem you have with government. You just think you get a new president in there and things will change immediately? No. You still got the same deep staters in the CIA, the FBI, the education department, the energy department, every aspect of government. So he couldn't get anything done, no matter who or what he ordered. I wonder what it'd be this time around if he makes it. Anyway, crazy, crazy, crazy country. We live in a crazy world that we live in. And again, if you enjoyed my interview with Andy Scheckman, please share it. Share this podcast with friends and family. You want to get in touch with me, very easy. Just send me an email, lou@thefinancialphysician.com. lou@thefinancialphysician.com. And as always, if you want to come in for a no-obligation one-hour financial consultation with me, just call my office at 732-905-8100. That's 732-905-8100. Have a wonderful week. And until next time, don't you forget, I'm not far right. I'm just right so far.